When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Welcome, everybody, to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where another dominant Lakers win against the New Orleans Pelicans. Beignet there, done that. Now, the Lakers just need to do it one more time on Tuesday so that Anthony Davis can say his final "That's all, folks," to David Griffin and the gang. Whether the Lakers want to do it one more time on Tuesday, considering who their first round opponent will be if they do win, is another question. All I know is, Smoothie King, bow down to the one true king, LeBron James. The Lakers are officially the 8th seed in the NBA. They are officially play-in bound, and now they have 2 chances to win one and have assured themselves at least one more home game at Crypto.com for this season. The 2023-24 NBA regular season is over. But when one marathon ends, yet another one begins. And for LeBron James and the Lakers, it's the one that counts. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and joining us today for this very special end-of-season play-in preview podcast episode is longtime friend of the podcast, the leader of the Late Night Lake Show Collective, our good buddy, Ricky Barnes. You know him as Mr. Ricky Spanish on Twitter. Ricky, welcome back to the show. How is springtime in Chi-Town? And are you ready for the play-in bound Lakers to bloom at just the right time?
What's going on, Jay? Yeah, man. Thanks for having me back. I'm currently sitting in my car outside of my company's office on the roof, and it is a perfect Chicago day right now. Not a cloud in the sky. No crazy weather on the forecast, man. So, you know, it's when the weather starts turning for the good around here, you know, we're starting to get close to the end of the regular season, start gearing up for the postseason for our Lakers, bro. So I'm hyped. I think more than anything, man, I am very grateful for this regular season to be over. And now we can kind of just turn the page and gear up for, you know, a race to 16. Right. So let's get into it. I'm hyped to be back on, bro.
No, absolutely. You want to talk about silly season? That was this season, and thank God it's done. We can finally get to business. So before we get into the Pelicans game, just give me your overall macro thoughts on how this year went. The last time we had you, I believe it was after another Houston Rockets loss where AD was out and the Lakers didn't have a big. That's kind of like an ongoing theme and through line of the last few years. And now we're here. The Lakers are the 8th seed. They have one more play-in game to go potentially in order to secure the number seven seed. But with regards to the season, yeah, how would you describe it? How's your mental health doing? It's been a roller coaster season. It's been a season of many runs, many flashes and glimpses of potential here and there, but always having that mini run disrupted in some way by some self-inflicted galaxy-brained ill that stops the Lakers' momentum at each turn. Whenever things would slightly head towards the right track and it seemed like the Lakers had finally made a turn, something stupid would happen to derail our season. So for me, that's kind of been the season in a nutshell. Little glimpses that all of a sudden get galaxy-brained and back into oblivion. It was the ultimate Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde season. It was the best of times. It was the literal worst of times kind of season. And yet here we are, 47 and 35. Sorry, God, that's another season. 47 and 35, almost a 50 win team. When the team plays its best players, they are a good team. And they could have been a top four team, but it took us half a season to get Taurean Prince off of his 30 minutes per game starting spot to realize that. But as they say, better late than never. And the title of this episode, Ricky, is Better Eight Than Never, even though the Lakers have the chance to get the seventh spot. They are officially the eighth seed. Anyways, what are your thoughts on your end of season thoughts for this Lakers 2023-24 season?
Yeah, you know, I think more than anything this season, I felt kind of the weight of their struggles more. Just that stretch after the in-season tournament, that took a chunk of my mental stability off of me. So I think I joked with my listeners over at Late Night Lake Show that, you know, I'm now going into, you know, a yogi kind of monk retreat. I didn't shave my head, Jay, but I was getting real close. I went on private for a little bit of time, just really needed to collect my thoughts and understand what does all this mean for my life, the Lakers' lives, our lives together. It was never a point where I was, you know, giving up on the boys, but I just think, you know, some time of reflection was definitely needed so I didn't lose my effing mind after every game. So I think that stretch, right, as unnecessary as some of that was, yeah, there were a couple of injuries here and there. A lot of the supporting cast, right? You know, Vando, we didn't have to start, and now to finish. Hopefully he can bounce back quickly. But it just felt like we had an architect, right? A kind of playing with all of these tools incorrectly, and us as fans, you know, just sitting there and watching the TV show, we're like, no, use that one, use Rui right now. And yep, you're watching them, you know, use a screwdriver for when you need a saw. And I think overall, man, that kind of was the frustrating moment for Lakers fans, including myself. But as you said, you know, better late than never. There was an in-season tournament championship in that, including an absolute ass whooping of the Pelicans on the way to that. So that was cool. You get that, you know, kind of achievement, being the first to win this. But it would also be pretty sweet if that was combined with a decent run here in the playoffs. So we're getting back to some coasting of, you know, just day-to-day Lakers excitement to be a Lakers fan every day. We're back to that era, right? Yeah. And I'm hyped about their opportunity. I'm actually very excited about their potential road to 18. You know, I just wish that some of those unnecessary moments never happen, but I guess you gotta grow through some of those growing pains, as the story goes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited as well, because there are things that the Lakers can take from their IST championship experience and their Western Conference Finals run last year that I think should help them on this run. And like LeBron James has said, he's healthier this year than he was for last year's run. And for me, that's kind of all I need to hear, you know? You're right. You know, like, there are some things that, look, I think the most frustrating thing for me this season was knowing that this team on paper was a good team. It was a solid team. And my caveat was always, if LeBron James and Anthony Davis are healthy, we have enough pieces here to right the wrongs of last season, I think.
For sure.
Biggest thing too, Ricky, is we preached continuity all throughout the offseason. The front office committed to all of these players, multi-year deals. And Darvin Ham gives deference to the expiring vet min players, the new guys all of a sudden.
Yep.
And while fans are just clamoring for, I thought the whole reason why we brought these dudes back was so that we could actually plant our foot into the ground and actually see what continuity looks like. And yes, as you mentioned, there were injuries here and there that disrupted the flow of things. But I think Darvin Ham took that way too far and used those things as excuses in order to gaslight the fans into thinking that he needed to start Torian Prince this entire time, that Torian Prince needed to play 30 minutes this entire time. Like, was Cam Reddish needed for this portion of the season? Yes, he was. But once the starters come back, Ricky, right, once Rui comes back, Cam Reddish goes back to being a 14th man. You know, like that's what depth is. That's what a veteran minimum depth piece is. He should not be a staple piece. But for some reason, Darvin Ham planted his foot on the ground with Cam Reddish, Torian Prince, and these guys who are on 1 to 2 year deals that the front office never meant for the team to commit to. And that's the biggest problem of the season. Sorry, you were going to say something.
Yeah, no, I was just going to piggyback off that. I call them Darvin's Angels to start the year, man. It was a whole bunch of the Cam Reddish, Torian Prince, you know, Atlanta Hawk connection, right? Even that's back true. Up in their Milwaukee days together with Cam. It's like, oh, man, this is nepotism right in front of our face. He's sticking with the folks that he knows and loves, right? There's those rumors about Ham looking at Torian as his Chris Middleton, and I almost threw up hearing that. But I'm glad, right, that it seemed like the development ended up, you know, we're starting to see the pieces in place a little bit more now with rotations. Going back to the team construct thought, right, once we finished out the roster and once D'Lo came back and we kind of saw, you know, and then the Christian Wood late signing happened, I'm looking at this roster, man, I'm pretty sure that like Bleach Report, one of those fan Instagram accounts, like screenshotted my pick, one of my tweets, and I said the Lakers are going to win the NBA championship this year. Mm-hmm. Just looking at this entire roster, and bro, 47 wins with all the frustrations that we endured, all the unnecessary mistakes that were happened. Shoot, 3 wins from a 50-win season, right? Yep. So that is, you know, and the mood going into the playoffs, while I think Lakers fans are feeling good, we'll talk about how the Denver matchup makes people feel, but I think being a 50-win team, possibly being a top 4 seed in the West, Lakers end up a top 4 seed this season, not one person's going to be complaining about them not being a 3, 2, or 1 seed with a 39-year-old LeBron James and Anthony Davis doing what they do. You would be like, oh, the rest of y'all are fucked, because not only did they show that they were competent consistently in getting a top 4 seed, now LeBron has clearly shown that he is not as injured as he was last season. And that should have everybody in the West pissing themselves. But by them being a 47-win team, now needing to pick up that extra win against the Pelicans and then going right into the rumble in the jungle against the defending champs, the mood's a little bit different. But, you know, I think we both saw, right, that this team was built to bring that consistency and that momentum from last season to this year, and to start off, what was it, 17-19 or some, you know, around that, it just was not good enough in the West.
Yeah, I think, well, actually, I think it was more, I think they were only 5 games above 500, 14-9 at some point through the IST. But can I ask you a question? Let's say the season played out exactly how it played out in terms of like the marginal injuries and whatnot. How many wins, extra wins, do you think the Lakers should have probably picked up if Darvin Ham had gone to the core guys sooner or stuck with those guys sooner, started Rui sooner? How many wins do you think we would have picked up? Technically, the Lakers should be a 48-win team because the IST championship game should have counted, but that's a conversation for another time. But how many wins do you think the Lakers should have picked up?
Yeah, so I'm, you know, I'll say a solid 5 games off the top of my head that they just tricked off, right?
Okay, early so 5 on games. In the season. Okay, so yep. 5 games. Do you know where that would put the Lakers? That would give the Lakers 52 wins.
Yep.
That would put them past the Clippers right now into the 4th seed with home court advantage in the first round. in a very, very deep West. So that just shows you the potential that this team had, even with Vando out for 70% of the season, even with Gabe Vincent out for 90% of the season. You know, like, we should have been a top four seed.
Absolutely.
So anyways, so last thing here is, I think for me, Ricky, the biggest thing that I learned about this season is, you know, LeBron James and Anthony Davis, but most especially LeBron James at 39 years old, he tends to spoil us with his greatness, right? And I think for me, because even at age 39, because LeBron James is such a given, especially when he's healthy, a podcast like ours, the Lakers Legacy Podcast, we tend to veer towards talking more about the ancillary players like D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves, Rui Hachimura, Dinwiddie, etc., just because they're more of the unknown wild cards, right? We want to dig into guys that are more on a day-in, day-out basis. You're not sure what they can give you to support LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And so in a weird way, LeBron and AD tend to be more on the edges. They become margin players on the Lakers Legacy Podcast. And for a large part of this season, we have gotten amazing performances and storylines from these other guys, you know, from each of the ancillary players, D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves, Rui Hachimura. And considering how their own coach has treated them and neutered them and stifled their ceilings, for each of these guys to have the types of seasons that they had with, you know, Austin Reeves, career high in points, assists, etc., D'Angelo Russell, career high 3-point percentage, like single season greatest 3-point season for the Lakers in franchise history, best assist to turnover ratio, etc., Rui Hachimura, career high in 3-pointers made, and all the developments that he's made. Each one of these guys has had their moments, right?
Yep.
But the biggest thing I learned, though, is when it's all said and done, at the end of the day, when the game is on the line, it always starts and ends with Anthony Davis and LeBron James. So clear out and watch the King work. It's good to be reminded that the team goes as LeBron James and Anthony Davis go. And here we are, yet another season in which LeBron James doesn't need the play-in to get into the playoffs. It only actually tacks on an extra unnecessary game or two that he needs to play. So, yeah, any thoughts on, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about LeBron.
Yeah, and I think I need to use this moment to post my official an apology. LeBron James, I said early on in the season that you were still dominant. You were still LeBron James. The turbo button just couldn't be held as long as we were spoiled with his first few seasons with the Lakers and his previous stops in his career, meaning that he still had them flashes of greatness and dominant being the best player on the court. I just worried about the overall, you know, deterioration of those tires as the season goes on and as the Lakers needing him to be LeBron James that early in the year. I am wrong. I am wrong. LeBron James has shown us, especially this last 2 months, really since the All-Star break, that he is just ramping up. He is just slowly pressing on the accelerator until he needs to max out all on all the stats. You saw it yesterday. I mean, that stat line, it's insane, man. And then we just sit down and then the Lakers end up posting that LeBron James is the first player ever in this category. And it's no longer just talking about he's the oldest player to do some shit. He's the only player to do some shit. And I'm just like, are we sure we are fully grasping and appreciating what we as Lakers fans are getting day in and day out? Like, I find it just almost laughable, Jay, right? That the vitriol, right, when he showed up and what he has just accomplished every year here, right? Maybe the championships, absolutely, we'd want another one. We'll see how this season ends. But LeBron has been nothing but LeBron effing James, just in different manifestations, going on 6 years with the franchise, man. I'm grateful. I can't believe that I doubted this man, especially early in the season when everybody needs to ramp up and get to game speed. I let the age and the number get to me. But clearly with LeBron James, age is just a number. He is going to be the best player on the court when they play the Pelicans tomorrow. And then when he steps up and they go up against Denver, if he's not one, which I'll give it to Jokic, he is absolutely number two before Jamal Murray and Anthony Davis. And I feel good with a healthy LeBron James stepping into the ring because he was not healthy last year in the playoffs. So, big dog, I'm sorry. I won't do it again.
For sure. I think I'll give you a little bit of credit just because we saw a season in which LeBron James and Anthony Davis were both healthy, and it still took like a tremendous effort by the whole team past after the All-Star break to get us to this point. But I do understand your line of thinking in terms of we should have always given LeBron James the benefit of the doubt with regards to how he paces himself. And if he looks a step slow or if he looks like he's not hitting the turbo button as hard, it's all by design. It's all by design for this moment, you know? So I think that's something we need to, until the wheels truly fall off and he shows us that he can't deliver, there's no reason to not give the king the benefit of the doubt. Even if we're in game 25 of the season and we're like, oh man, LeBron James can't win against the Memphis Grizzlies without D'Angelo Russell. This dude is
right. He's not playing defense. Yeah. He's doing this. Like, he's picking and choosing. And it's like, hold up. We ever stop to think that this might just be preserving the tank? And I think, right, to our points, they were there, he was present, he was active, so was AD, and it still wasn't enough for a lot of those games, which is why we had the tiki torches and the pitchforks out for Coach Pockets. But yeah, man, just I'm zipping it until the wheels fall off, and even then, I'm gonna try to help him, you know, put the spare tire back on and support him until the very end.
For sure. So let's get into the Pelicans beatdown, because LeBron James and Anthony Davis were huge parts of that. And another reminder that when these dudes are healthy and when they're locked in for games that matter, it's go time, and the team goes as LeBron James and Anthony Davis go. So the Lakers smacked the Pelicans down 124-108 last night. They were in control for the entire game, dictating the pace, stifling the paint. LeBron James on Zion was amazing to witness. Brandon Ingram returned, but he was kind of a shell of himself, understandably. And I had conjectured days prior that maybe him returning would actually throw the rest of the Pelicans off because they had been rolling. Either way, he was largely a neutral factor. I know that's going to be different on Tuesday's game. They're going to let that guy loose. But yeah, what stood out to you the most in the Pelicans game? Because for me, like, the Lakers were operating on a string on both ends, but most especially defensively. The Lakers' size and physicality amongst LeBron, AD, and Rui really neutralized the Pelicans' own size and physicality with Zion, Jonas, and all of their wings. Like, typically wings like Herb Jones and Trey Murphy and Dyson Daniels, typically I'd see those guys as problems for a team, but when LeBron, AD, and Rui are that much of a handful on both ends, all of a sudden our skill guards like D'Lo and AR, they just are able to be more awesome connector pieces where the burden isn't solely on them to produce, and they can find a rhythm for themselves without forcing it, because look at our skilled bigs dictating the terms on both ends. It literally looked like, especially when you look at the matchup between LeBron James and Zion Williamson, and then AD and Jonas Valanciunas, and Rui against whoever the hell was on him, whether it was Ingram, Trey Murphy, whoever, it really looked like varsity versus JV, you know? Yep. So for me, it's crazy when the Lakers, especially after this season, it's crazy whenever you can come out of the game realizing that the Lakers looked like the more athletic, physically imposing, and faster team, because that's exactly what they were against the Pelicans. And again, when LeBron and AD are that locked in and even just relatively healthy, they are able to channel and access this additional burst of athleticism and explosiveness that they didn't necessarily have throughout the season. They can channel all of that for this final push, and I feel like we saw the full extent of that in a must-win game for the Lakers in order to get the eighth seed. And as it turns out, Ricky, I guess bully ball doesn't work when the other team has a bigger bully on their end. And in the Lakers' case, two bigger bullies. So what stood out to you about the Pelicans game?
Yeah, exactly that, brother. So, you know, the Pelicans' top two players are Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson. Zion Williamson, who was next up and the heir to the throne of, you know, the next LeBron as far as hype, right, and his size and his dominance and his twitchiness, you thought, okay, this is going to be a different clone of LeBron James. But you realize there's only one original. There's only one prototype. You build off of that. Some tests might go well. Some tests might not go well. But at the end of the day, man, Zion steps on the court and he looks in LeBron's eyes. He sees what he could pray to be as far as that mix of size, aggressive, and still wherewithal and court awareness and vision. There was many times Zion Williamson did that hard drive to his left, and all LeBron was doing was just sitting on it, man, and Zion was dribbling into traffic. It's because LeBron has mastered the mental part of basketball, and especially players who have some pretty consistent tells and trends in how they want to attack the basket. It's not going to be that every night for Zion Williamson, because not everybody has bigs with that type of IQ, that type of strength to match him, and just the overall confidence in saying, sorry, young buck, this is just not your time. Maybe against, you know, the Pacers, maybe you could go and battle it out with Paolo down in Orlando. But when you come and meet the OG, you're going to have some tricks in your back pocket. And I just don't think Zion Williamson has the facility for that right now in his career. So you go ahead and you take care of one of their main pieces. Then you got B.I., who was coming off of an injury, right? You saw his flashes of getting hot. But at the end of the day, right, man, B.I. is a mid-range assassin. That's what he does. It's still hard to navigate in those areas, man, when you have a versatile big like Anthony Davis who can cover as much ground. Hands, you know, will be disruptive. Then you add in a player like Rui Hachimura, which, you know, Jay, you know, I just love me some Rui Hachimura network content, man. That boy, he does exactly everything that I would imagine I would do if I ever had that type of basketball success. I see a lot of what I want to do on the basketball court when I look at Rui. And the fact that he last night had the awareness, and I'm sure it was by design, Rui had more cuts than a handful of spades against the Pelicans. And I'm sure they're probably looking at that. Coach Green is looking at that on their end and saying, hey, we're going to have to cut that off. But man, I'm sorry. There are just too many factors in the post, and especially the paint. Let's just call it the paint in general, where their best players operate and are best at. The Lakers kind of had that location locked down, brother. It's just, it's a nasty setup for them. And the scores of these last four meetings, they reflect that. These are belt to ass. Pick a switch off a tree, bring it in the house, and it better not be a small one, or I'm going to do it worse than the first time. That's what we're watching right now. And I think that the Pelicans, if they want any respect as a franchise and organization or any type of lifestyle outside of Creole and Bourbon Street, they're going to have to put together a better performance tomorrow night. And I expect them to, but at the end of the day, they got to get past the three Migos in the paint of LeBron, Rui, and AD. And that is tough.
It sure is. Ricky, you were on some bars there. I was like, oh, I like the rhythm and cadence of this. And you're just doing this from your car and the rooftop of your office. Amazing. We should have you do this more often in that context. No, but totally. Like, look, you know who Zion looked like last night? And I'm not throwing any shade on this guy, but Zion looked like Julius Randle, but the bad version, like New Orleans Julius Randle, where he's just throwing up flip shots that don't have a shot, that don't have a chance. And I'm like, ooh, man, LeBron James is surely locked in for this one. And look, LeBron James was cutting the Pelicans up surgically with his passing in the first quarter. I think he had like 8 or 9 assists in the first quarter. And it's crazy that like LeBron James was actually scoreless in the first quarter. And then he ends the game with 28 points, you know? So he had 28 points in the next three quarters, finishes with a triple-double. What was it? 28 points, 11 rebounds, 17 assists? Like, a true masterclass of a game from LeBron James. And then Anthony Davis, 30 and 11. I think he only missed 3 shots. Like, the Lakers as a whole brought it. And LeBron James and Anthony Davis set the tempo and pace of the game and dictated the terms with their leadership. But look, it boils down to this. The Lakers stars were vastly better than the Pelicans stars, but also the Lakers supporting cast was vastly better than the Pelicans supporting cast. You know, like, what happened to Trey Murphy? What happened to CJ McCollum? All of a sudden, like, they can't hold a light to D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves, and Rui Hachimura, you know? And that was the difference of the game, and that's why it was such a blowout. If the Pelicans role players had actually stepped up, maybe it would have been more of a game, but I mean, LeBron and AD just ripped the hearts out of the Pelicans and ripped their confidence, you know, out of their chest as well. And, you know, the Lakers passing in total, some of the sets they were running, the double drag actions, the players swinging the ball decisively from one end of the court to the next, like the way they were running in transition. Rui Hachimura had that really nice like outlet pass to Austin Reeves for the two-handed dunk. I've never seen Rui Hachimura make an outlet pass that precise, you know, and then LeBron had that double hand touch pass to AD for the dunk in transition, which was absolutely insane. I mean, it was just beautiful basketball from the Lakers for much of that game. And I do want to just credit their supporting role players because there was a lot of questions about them leading up to this game, right? Like D'Angelo Russell had been struggling the last two or three games. Austin Reeves was kind of mediocre. Rui Hachimura was kind of fading into the shadows just because he's typically like the fourth or fifth option on this team. And so there were a lot of questions about, can the supporting cast, you know, bring it when the lights are the brightest? And yesterday they did. And I almost liken it and describe it to, Ricky, like the final battle in a Marvel movie or like an X-Men 97 episode to make the reference more relevant. Like,
fantastic series, by the way.
Everyone, it is, absolutely. And if you watch the last episode, this parallel makes even more sense because I felt like everyone in the starting lineup was able to showcase and show off their special abilities and powers and do what they do best at the time that the Lakers needed it the most, right? For like sure. LeBron and AD, you saw what they could do, but also you saw what the other guys could do. This game was a snapshot of everything they've done post All-Star break this season, you know, where Rui cutting off ball and throwing down all these one-handed hammer jams on the baseline, showing how much he's improved as a passer and a rebounder. Then you've got Austin Reeves playing great defense on CJ McCollum, attacking the paint, doing his and one street ball thing that he likes to do, getting floaters, hitting step back threes. And then you got D'Lo doing his staple three-point heater thing where he hits two threes in a row in the second, three threes in a row in the third to bust the game wide open. They all showed off their special powers, you know, and it all culminated in this great collective team win. So I'm just proud of the guys that they showed up at, and met the moment. And yeah, any last thoughts on the game?
Yeah, no, I think that the Marvel analogy is fire, man, because I'm thinking of Rui. He's moving like Hulk right now, or the Beast, to keep it X-Men, right, with all of his strength, right, and the smarts, right, for the cuts, right. Then you got D'Lo. Obviously, he reminds me of one of the Iceman or somebody that just freezes shit, and he's like unconscious, bro. Like, I call those D'Lo's unconscious moments, and when he is clicking in that part, and you got, you know, the equivalent of Austin, like you said, being skipped to my Lou out there. There was one, man, where he absolutely lost Zion Williamson on a move
for the floater.
Bro, I'm like, what? Well, it's still, and I, you know, Austin's been with us a few years now, but it still sometimes confuses the hell out of me. I'm like, Austin is this saucy, man? Where is he from? Oklahoma? What the hell? A farm in Oklahoma? Where did he pick this shit up?
But it's crossing over the goats and shit.
No, literally, right? The goats must have been playing decent defense to be this polished at this point. But I mean, like, AR, man, like you said, and you know, it was a perfect just a culmination. LeBron goes to the bench. The first thing I saw at the next possession is Austin hitting just a top of the key three. And I'm like, see, this is how I know these games are going to be an avalanche rolling downhill, because everyone has the confidence, right? And they're seeing the shots falling, and they're suffocating their opponents on defense. So that was a perfect storm of a game from the Lakers yesterday. Let's see if they can repeat it now in 48 hours.
Yeah, and the perfect encapsulation of that confidence, too, is when D'Angelo Russell with confidence and without confidence is the most different player you've ever. It's like, that is true Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And you know when D'Angelo Russell is confident, because there was that one play in the third quarter where he got the rebound himself. He's taking it up 90 feet. LeBron James and Rui Hachimura are running down the baseline, and you see D'Angelo Russell wave them off. He tells LeBron James, go sit on the baseline. Rui, stay there. I'm pulling up for this transition three. And he pulls up maybe like further than he probably should have. B.I. tries to close out. Doesn't matter. D'Angelo Russell hits it. The Lakers are up by 30. And I'm like, all right, this is game over. Like, everybody is too confident right now. Everybody's got that swagger and the vibes are immaculate. So perfect game for the Lakers. Can they do it again on Tuesday is the question. Do they want to do it again on Tuesday is another question. So why don't we take it to break here when we return? Let's talk about what now for the Lakers, whether they want to win that first play-in game. Could there be a second play-in game and who their first round opponent might be? So we will catch you guys after the turn.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, so we are back. Ricky, as you know, for much of this season, the Lakers can never have nice things without the other shoe dropping, right? And we almost got that scenario in the Pelicans game when the Lakers obviously are beating the Pelicans down. Everybody's having a fun time. Everybody's having a lit time. And then all of a sudden, Anthony Davis gets pushed in the back by Larry Nance Jr. Obviously, the foul isn't called because the refs. And then after that, Anthony Davis, the next play down after setting like a screen, reaches for his back and has to exit the game and actually heads to the locker room and isn't able to finish the game. So we almost had that heart scare right there. Luckily, it seems like it was just a random back spasm flare up. But again, you know, this just shows you like these things are so delicate. You could lose the season on the flip of a dime, right? And leave it to the basketball gods to always keep the Lakers on their toes this season. That said, Anthony Davis says he will 100% be playing on Tuesday. So speaking of the basketball gods and Tuesday, let's talk about play-in game number one for the Lakers. The Lakers are going to have to play the Pelicans again in New Orleans on Tuesday. In some ways, this might have been the best scenario for the Lakers, given the fact that they don't have to do any additional travel. They get to stay in New Orleans and continue to rest up and scheme for the Pelicans again this coming Tuesday. Now, if the Lakers beat the Pelicans, again, they gain sole ownership of the number 7th seed, which would then have them matched up against the the number 2 seeded Denver Nuggets, who they will play on Saturday for the first round of the playoffs. Now, if the Lakers lose to the Pelicans on Tuesday, they would then play again on Friday at Crypto against either the Warriors or Kings, whoever wins out of that play-in bracket. And if they win that game, they would then take the 8th seed and face the number 1 Oklahoma City Thunder on Sunday. Obviously, there is a more preferred first-round matchup to take here. But the question is, Ricky, the real question is, do the Lakers dare tempt fate and screw around with the basketball gods and pseudo-tank Tuesday's game in order to get the first-round matchup that they want? Your quick thoughts on what they should do and how you feel about that conversation right now that's going on in Lakers Nation.
Yeah, and I see there's differing opinions about this. It's rolled all the way up to Get Up and folks writing articles about the different situation. I'm like, good Lord, man, what happened to competition out here? But no, in all seriousness, you do, you know, obviously see the advantage of losing the first game, winning the second game, and then being matched up with the OKC Thunder, which is, you know, they're the number 1 seed. You know, Shea has every right to be an MVP consideration right now. But Lakers fans are probably confident, and the NBA community is probably confident about that matchup because the Thunder are too green, right? This is, you know, kind of how the script goes. The younger teams, the young talented teams jump out, play really hard during the regular season, and rightfully so. They earn one of those top 2 seeds. And then when it's playoff time, you know, all the going back to when, you know, the Bulls, in their heyday, they weren't always the number 1 seed in the East, but at the end of the day, no one was picking against them, right? So I think people who want to see OKC and get on that side of the bracket I'll just say I get it. But from a spirit of competitiveness and a spirit of not tempting fate, okay, you lose, and then you have to beat the Warriors or the Kings. Don't know if we remember, the Kings have been effing up the Lakers, you know, this season. And I think it even dates back to last season as well. Like that, yeah. Do people feel like that's a good matchup for the Lakers when it's proved that they struggle against Sabonis and Fox and containing either of them? I mean, no, sure. And then I just find it a little disrespectful, right? Like, I'm the first one to take some shots at Dub Nation and the fan base and just the Warriors dynasty in general, but I still respect the power of Steph Curry. What are we talking about? Like, yes, we could scheme, we can do this. We knocked him out last year in a similar situation, but I'm not a do or die game for the end of the season again against Steph. Okay. I'm saying that's a toss-up, right? Like, I have to still respect the goats of this era. And Steph is up there, and he's still shown this year that he is a very dangerous man. So I come back to this matchup against the Pelicans. It, you know, it would just be a little weird to tap that ass in the last regular season game, then turn around and almost punt to then have a do-or-die game for the rest of your NBA season lives. Play the game, play hard, play to win. And let's say the Pelicans get out and it looks like this is about to be an ass whooping on the other side, right? The Pelicans look like they're going to run away with this one. All right, maybe you sit LeBron a little sooner. Maybe you sit AD a little sooner and not care about what the end of the score is, and you get ready for your matchup against the winner of the Kings and the Warriors. But for the fact of, like, for the notion of just straight up tanking and saying, nope, we prefer the 9-10 matchup, that's not for me, man. I can't sit right with that.
And I don't think you can even allow the seed of that thought to enter any of those players' minds. You know, I think they can do exactly what you said and play the, like, feel, not, I don't even want to say feel the game out, play to win the game. And if it doesn't turn in your favor, then you can start making preparations for what's next. But you don't go into the game, even with the seed of a thought that you may have a better matchup if you lose this game. The moment you have that thought, you've lost the game already, and then the basketball gods are going to just screw the hell out of you. Because here's what's going to happen. The moment you do that, then you know, then something wonky will end up happening where let's say the Lakers even get out of the Kings-Warriors second play-in game, right? Let's say the Lakers do duck the Nuggets and they get the matchup that they want. Because they did not do right by the basketball gods, you just know that whichever team gets the Nuggets, all of a sudden Nikola Jokic will go down with an injury, and then they'll be able to sweep the Nuggets, right? And the Lakers could have had that matchup, or the Lakers end up potentially losing to the Thunder anyways. You know, like, that's what happens when you screw with the basketball gods. So I agree with you. Like, don't mess around on Tuesday. Go for the win. I think the biggest thing for me too is, like, after the season that we've just seen, with the Lakers botching up process every step along the way, can we act like we've learned something? Let's do right by process finally and see where the basketball gods take us from there. You know, do I think that the Lakers have a good shot against the Nuggets in the first round? Not really. Would I prefer a better matchup for the Lakers? Yes. But again, what have we been preaching this entire season? Like, process over results. The results will come if you do right by process. It may not come this season, but again, like, we just can't be toying around with fate in this way. And in some respects, Ricky, I think it's almost poetic that the Nuggets could end up being, the Nuggets were the last team we saw in the playoffs last year, and they could be the first team we see in the playoffs this year. I like the poetry in that. And what are the Lakers going to do in that scenario? Yep. For me, it's time to put on your big boy pants and strap up. Like, come on, AD. Come on, D'Angelo Russell. Time to exercise some of your Denver Nuggets demons. This is the perfect way for the Lakers to really see where they stand. See whether or not they've learned something from last season, whether they've improved, you know? And as we've mentioned, this is the healthiest the Lakers are going to be for the playoffs because it's the first round, you know? So why not go balls to the wall? we may end up expending so much of our energy just trying to get out of the first round series against the Nuggets. And even if we miraculously do that, maybe we'll be so worn out and battle scarred that we won't have juice for the rest of the playoffs. And maybe we flame out that way. But this is the Denver Nuggets we're talking about. This is like our own personal World War III. Like, we have to exercise these demons and get this monkey off our back before next season starts. And you may as well do it sooner rather than later. No need to drag this out. Let's rip the Band-Aid off. We shall learn something very substantial about this team one way or another after this first round, for better or for worse. And we can use that to more accurately assess the team moving forward. And so that's the silver lining I take away from this, even if we face the Denver Nuggets. So is there anything else you want to add on to that?
Yeah, no, that was well said. I think, you know, you can't cheat fate. You can't do it, guys. It's going to happen. And this is the reality of the situation, right? If the Lakers wanted to avoid Denver, if they possibly wanted a more favorable bracket, the year would have gone differently. This is the plate that they ordered. So this is the food that they're going to have to eat and finish their meal if they want a championship. Sorry, no one's coming to save the Los Angeles Lakers season. If you saw it at the trade deadline, they didn't do nothing about it, right? They said, hey, y'all got enough. Figure it out. You know, add a little Spencer Dinwiddie into that, whatever. But this is what the team has manifested this season. Guys, mm-hmm. I'm not going to beg for a different matchup. Would I prefer to see the Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals after the Lakers sweep one team, then go 4-1 in the next series? Absolutely. Sure. That's not the Lakers that we have. That's not the team that we get as we head into the playoffs. And I think the last point to this that I just want to get off is I would rather spin the block on the Nuggets first and with the fresher legs and with just all the momentum heading down. Hell, who's to say you couldn't be in a bloodbath with OKC? Then you turn around and then you're in a bloodbath with Dallas. Luka's a bad boy. What are we talking about? Kyrie's a nasty MF out there. What are we saying, guys? Like, there's no equation necessarily in this West standings, the playoff bracket, in which you're going to get an easy route. So eat your food, figure it out. And if the Lakers need to be excused from the table earlier than we expected, well, hell, then that's just what it is. And then we move our sights to the Fire Darvin Ham party. So, I can't lose. I can't lose.
That's true. I love that perspective. And so, yeah, look at it this way. The Lakers need to win the game on Tuesday, go balls to the wall to win on Tuesday. If they don't win, well, then the Lakers have a great silver lining consolation prize that they can sort of take advantage of, right? There's an opportunity there all of a sudden, but they shouldn't use that opportunity to sway how they approach Tuesday's game, right? Again, they could very much lose to the New Orleans Pelicans on Tuesday. And if that happens, well, then they have one more home game to exorcise their Sacramento Kings demons. For AD, it's exorcise his Sabonis demons, his 0-10 Sabonis demons. Or they have one more home game to truly end the Curry-Clay dynasty, which would be fun. And then they get, you know, the quote-unquote better matchup against the Oklahoma City Thunder. But to your point, look, they're an inexperienced team. We have matched up well against them this season, but that is a young athletic team who is going to make the Lakers run, you know? And that might not be what's best for us in a 7-game series. So, yeah, I mean, I think we're in alignment. Don't tempt the basketball gods. Win on Tuesday, see what happens, or try to win on Tuesday, see what happens, and we go from there. Now, to close this episode, Ricky, let's say that the Lakers do win on Tuesday, and let's say that they do face the Nuggets. Just give me your prediction of what happens in a first round series with the Nuggets from there.
Yeah. Lakers win in 7. That's what I think is probably what my heart has to prepare for, is a full on, you know, it's going to be a bloodbath, man. Jokic has not slowed down. right? He's not dealing with some ailment or injury, right? Murray, he's come back, right, from whatever was bothering him where he was out for a little bit. But, you know, Michael Porter Jr. is clearly an Iron Man this year after a career of not being healthy. And they're ready to go. I mean, Aaron Gordon's still there. Yes, they don't have Bruce Brown. They seem like they found Christian Braun, and he is clearly a needed piece in their rotation. And they're a team. KCP is still a battle-tested veteran who is now, I believe, coming up on a contract year. So I'm sure he's trying to dance in the playoffs himself and prove that, you know, I'm ready for another big boy contract after this one, whether with Denver or testing the market elsewhere. So I have to be realistic in that standpoint. I expect an ass-whooping of the New Orleans Pelicans. That's what I can say confidently, right? I want that franchise cut off the map and be in consideration to replace the G League Ignite team as a lower level organization. But then I got to give all respect to the defending champs. They best players are healthy right now. They're playing well. And if we're going to beat them, we're going to need Jared Vanderbilt healthy, right? And we're going to need to be prepared to duke this out for a full 7-round brawl. So Lakers in seven.
Lakers in seven. Okay, nice. Okay. Yeah, I think so. I'm going to be a little bit more pessimistic than you, although I like that optimism. I'm just going to be honest and say that we're probably not likely to win this series against the Denver Nuggets, especially with no Vanderbilt and no Christian Wood. This Lakers team was built under the premise that we'd have a very deep stable of versatile forwards and bigs to throw at Jokic, and we don't. And the Nuggets, unfortunately, are the exact type of team that we need all of those guys for. One benefit of ducking the Nuggets, by the way, Ricky, is if, let's say, we get them again in the Western Conference Finals, maybe Vando is ready for that series. Maybe Wood is ready for that series. Or also, maybe the Nuggets get knocked out in the second round because this is a deep-ass West and anything can happen. So there is a benefit in potentially ducking the Nuggets. But if we have to face them in the first round, yeah, it's going to be tough. I think the Lakers, and I view this as an improvement, I think the Lakers can take it to six and actually win two games, which is something we haven't seen them do against the Nuggets for 3 years now, you know, like win a game, two years now. So I will view that as improvement because without Vando and again, without Wood, without our complete stable of guys, even with LeBron James healthier than he was last year, and even if D'Angelo Russell exercises his demons from the Western Conference last season, it's tough to face a team that physical and that skilled, especially with the MVP in Jokic. So I'll have the Lakers losing in six, but I will consider that an improvement, and I think we'll see improvements and growth for key guys that can be enough silver linings for us to hold on to. And then the biggest silver lining for me will be, even if we take the Nuggets to six, that's still a first-round loss on the Lakers franchise record books that looks bad, right? And I think that will be enough for the Lakers front office to start seriously considering whether they need to make another personnel change this offseason at the head coaching position. And so those are the silver linings I'll take away, but I think the Lakers will bring it in the first round against the Nuggets. I think they will show that they've learned a few things. LeBron James will tactically, if his coach isn't going to do it for him, Ricky, LeBron James will do it for himself on the court. Him and AD will figure some things out to help the Lakers make this a more competitive series than it was last year. But then, yeah, we'll see where they go from there. That said, ending statement here is just win every game in front of you and then see where it goes from there.
That's it, man.
With that said, Ricky, thank you so much for joining me. It is, at least for now, a very exciting time to be a basketball fan. We're going to get basketball starting Tuesday every day. We got playoff basketball coming. Everybody's going to be locked in. Everybody's going to be coming for each other's throats. There's no better time to be an NBA fan. And hopefully we can say that for our Lakers fandom as well. So with that said, Ricky, why don't you tell the people where they can find you and take us out?
Yeah, appreciate it, Jay, man. We got to do this more. Hopefully we can connect a couple more times during the playoffs for a long Lakers run. Yes. But you guys know where to follow the brand for all post-game spaces and good content throughout the week, late night Lakers. You want to follow me and my fluid thoughts of consciousness, you can follow me at Mr. Ricky Spanish. And yeah, man, we're excited. Another playoff season for our Lakers. At the end of the day, We play for banners. We play for championships. It's nice to be back in this consistency of we're seeing postseason basketball. It wasn't very long ago, right, where we were in the drought for not even smelling the playoffs. So back to I'm loving that this is our expectations at the very minimum, right, here in Lakerland.
And last but certainly not least, we cannot take LeBron James for granted. We're not sure how long this playoff run is going to last, but every playoff game that we're able to see LeBron James for the next, 1 to 2 years is something that we need to be grateful for and really be in the moment for. So it's going to be fun, regardless of how long this run is going to be. So with that said, Ricky, thank you for joining me, and we will catch you guys next time.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it.
See ya.